Welcome to We Mentor Mondays with Nancy podcast. Get inspired. Break through to new dimensions with your entrepreneurial peers on the journey of self-leadership mastery and life success. Reinvent or evolve yourself as you redesign your business. Dual innovation. Take charge of who you next become. Feel more deeply to think, act, lead, and mentor more clearly and more effectively. Learn something new from our conversation today.
Nancy, thank you so much for allowing me to participate in this conversation. I learned that it is important to continue having these conversations as often and as frequently as possible, and in all areas of your spheres of influence, not only your work, but your personal life as well.
Welcome to We Mentor Mondays. I'm Nancy. Recently, I brought you groundbreaking conversations with Dr. Lois Zachary and Lisa Fain, their mother-daughter transition of ownership at the Center of Mentoring Excellence. So Dr. Lois Zachary handed off the baton to Lisa Fain, and we haven't heard a lot of women owners passing the legacy of their businesses on to their daughters. And so it was a very enlightening conversation. And together they wrote a book called Bridging Differences for Better Mentoring. The whole conversation was really enlightening, and their book is really a fundamental for bringing cultural competency into the workplace, which is part of our conversation today in this three-part series. But they talked about that we start out with a monocultural mindset, and this is based on Dr. Milton Bennett's work. The monocultural mindset really is when we're kind of in denial, like we're missing the differences about people and we're not acknowledging them, we're dismissing them. And this happens in any new culture that we're learning about. And then we move through to polarization, where we're judging the differences. There's a increase, or there's a better than, or there's just a way in which we judge the difference because we're polarizing. We're becoming aware of the polarization between the two cultures that we're thinking about, that we're learning about. Anyways, the third focus is really about minimization, where they de-emphasize the difference. Like, the situation with poverty is not as bad as, you know, it really is, because if they just did this, thus, and so in this particular population, that things would be better. That's minimizing the difference, and it's not really accepting a difference. The focus is on the person's own culture. And the next level is acceptance. The acceptance part is where you're starting to deeply comprehend the difference. What do I do about it? You become more other focused, and that means that you're adapting and implementing or bridging the differences to really have a deeper understanding of yourself and the other person and their culture. And that brings us to the intercultural mindset. So every time we're learning about a new culture, those are kind of the experiences based on the research and the work that is done by Dr. Milton Bennett in the field of cultural competency and really enabling growth as we understand each other and bridge our differences. So I wanted to bring that to you today because I think it sets the foundation for our conversation, the three-part series that I put together with two women veterans in the trades who are united in their mission toward expanding culturally competent workplaces where all people are seen, heard, respected, represented, and included in leadership and workplace decision-making. Karen McCabe, she's the director of outreach at McGough Construction, and Wendy Sullivan is a multi-venture entrepreneur and CEO of Wenrich PD Construction, LLC. They're veterans who have insightful and unique perspectives that I would like to bring with you through a three-part conversation. So our first conversation is with Karen at McGough to understand her history in what she's doing at McGough, which is a construction company that has a long history in Minnesota. So we'll focus our first conversation getting perspective on Karen and learn more about her. And then our second conversation, we'll delve into the multi-venture entrepreneurial world of Wendy Sullivan's and see how her life took shape and what her experiences have been about inclusion and diversity and cultural competency. And then the third part is our practical approach or a cultural competency in practice. Those two are working together. Wendy's company is a subcontractor at McGough, and so they're going to talk about their personal and working relationship. And so that'll round out this part of their series. In preparing for this, I realized how much there is to talk about and different ways in which to look at each, you know, how the intersection between our differences and how we can utilize our differences to really elevate each other and know each other better. To give you a little bit more background about McGough, they're known as a world-class construction business. They have their own centers for excellence that have 8 resource areas. Today, we are focusing on equal opportunity and the outreach area, which is where Karen McCabe is the director of. It's a company that began building its legacy in the 1800s. As outreach director, Karen is responsible for McGough's diversity and inclusion efforts, both internally and externally. She's a 22-year veteran of the company and has held several departmental and initiative leadership positions during her tenure. Karen shares McGough's dedication to developing and strengthening relationships within the construction and diversity communities. A steadfast believer in the servant leadership model, she is part of several advisory boards and organizational committees. Karen has a Bachelor of Arts degree in communications from St. Catharines University and is a lifelong learner. She's on the Friends of St. Paul College, St. Paul Public Schools Career Technical Education Advisory, and Minnesota Builders Exchange Board, and is the Chair Emeritus for the Workforce Innovation Board of Ramsey County. She's also won lots of awards, and you can scroll down to see that in her bio. Hi, Karen.
Good morning.
How are you?
Thank you for having me.
Yes. How are you?
Good. I'm excited to share my career path with you and hear about Wendy's career path and then share how we're working together with your audience.
Excellent. So where did you grow up?
Well, let's see. I grew up in St. Paul. I attended St. Luke's Catholic School until I was in third grade. And then our family picked up and moved to Montemita, which is where I lived until I left home and went to college. Yeah. So grew up in St. Paul, and I still consider myself a St. Paulite.
Okay. And that explains your volunteering over in that neck of the woods. Who else was in your home growing up?
Oh my goodness. We had quite a large family. So my mother, my father, myself, who's the eldest of 7 siblings. So we had quite a large and noisy group.
Oh, and what were your childhood interests?
One of the things that really struck me when you asked that question of me is, looking back, reading has always been something that has been an interest and a passion of mine. So I read a lot. I think growing up as the eldest child of 2 civil servants, we didn't have a lot of money. So reading allowed me to travel, to time travel. So I went to different decades. I learned, and it also gave me a little bit of time by myself. So you can imagine with 9 people in the house, privacy was not very prominent. So reading gave me an opportunity to go into my own world. And then work was really important. As the eldest of 7 kids, I did a lot of babysitting. We didn't have a lot of extra money. So if I wanted anything outside of the normal food and shelter and clothing, I had to work for it. I started working when I was about 11 years old and babysat, cleaned houses, those types of things. And I was thrilled when I turned 16 and actually got a real job and could pay taxes. It's crazy, but.
Yeah, no, I can appreciate that. Yeah, I know what you mean. What did you enjoy about growing up in your home?
Oh, I think the controlled chaos was something that I loved quite a bit. There was always people coming and going and things happening and drama and those types of things. I really also enjoyed the responsibility of being the oldest. That really taught me a lot and kind of made me who I was or who I am, I guess, right now.
Yeah.
And then I have six brothers and sisters who are lifelong friends of mine, as well as my siblings. I think those are the three areas that resonate the most with me and I'm the most appreciative of.
Who were your caretakers? Your parents?
Yes. My mom and dad. My dad was a St. Paul police officer and my mother was a nurse, which at the time, I'm rather old. So at the time, having your mom work was really unusual. With that, some of the child care duties and cooking duties and cleaning duties and stuff like that fell to me. But I wasn't the only one in the family. We were all required to keep the household running. So everybody had their chores and their responsibilities and stuff.
Oh, yeah, nice. And how did your family address life-changing challenges? And if you wanted to name one as an example, that would be great too.
We have been pretty blessed in our family with long life and health. I think the challenges that I saw, and I can't really call out one in particular that stood out to me while I was growing up, is that it's just that we worked together, rolled up our sleeves and just kind of worked through it together. I did have a sibling, I do have a sibling, but she had severe asthma as a child and still has a bad case of asthma. So there was several times that I recall growing up when she required emergency medical services. And when that happened, I think my parents both focused on her needs and we had my mother's mother would join us and take over. So it really was, how can we get through this together as a family unit?
And what was the background of your parents as far as their cultural, we're talking about cultural competency, but in cultural diversity, what's your ethnic background?
My family are all Caucasian. And that cultural diversity, frankly, I was really not exposed to very much until I took on this role as outreach director. So my education in this area has really grown. And I consider myself moving through that acceptance into that intercultural mindset. I'm certainly not there yet. I'm learning and making mistakes every day. In fact, Wendy helped me out just today in making sure that I understood a certain term. So I'm in the process of learning. I felt, as I think a lot of people that I connect with in the construction industry, is that we, because we are monoculturalistic in the industry, and the majority of us are Caucasian, that, and we treat everyone as brothers and sisters because we're all union affiliated, or most of us are union affiliated, and that's that mindset, is that there really wasn't an issue. And so I have learned an incredible amount about systemic racism, my own interpersonal relationships with individuals outside of my culture, and how I am affected by my own biases, and how do I recognize them and overcome them and get to a point where I can be not only accepting, but I can be a little bit more fluid in my cultural competency.
Nice. Yeah, good for you. That's that deeper understanding, right? At first you see everybody as the same and then you realize, no, we have our unique differences. And what are those? And what makes each person's life different than my own? And you expand out. And when you grow up in an all the same environment, you're not aware of what someone else is coming into.
That's right. It's like the fish in water. They don't recognize water because it's all around them and they don't know what that is. Much like the air that we breathe. But I have been very blessed. My eyes opened up to the challenges that other races, other genders, other sexual orientations, individuals face and communities face. And with that, how do we overcome that and learn more to work together?
Yeah.
To accept our differences and to value them.
Nice. When did you begin asserting self-leadership? I know you got your undergraduate degree in communications at St. Catherine University, or which is now St. Catherine University. It used to be the College of St. Catherine.
So, right.
Yeah. When did you start asserting self-leadership or taking charge of your personal and your leadership growth?
I think because of my placement in the family and my responsibilities growing up, I have always been regarded as a leader in a certain sense. And so I've always been a learner. So I think that learner and that leader piece of it goes really well together. So I think I was taught that as growing up through the responsibilities that my family allowed me to have. And as far as taking care of my professional life, I get bored rather quickly. And so once I feel like I've accomplished something or feel like it doesn't allow me any more challenges or opportunities for growth, then I ask for more responsibility or different responsibility. I've always done that. And so I think that adds to part of that opportunity for leadership growth as well.
Yeah. And what were the skill sets and education that you initially, maybe not the education as much as the skill set that you brought to McGough?
Well, I started out as a laborer 22 years ago out in the field, and I was very green to the industry as a whole. And so I think what I brought was my willingness to work hard. I'm a really hard worker. I like physical work. I think there's something very satisfying about it. And I think we as a society have misplaced our respect for hard physical work. I also brought my sense of curiosity. I have a tendency, Wendy can vouch for this, I have a tendency to ask a lot of questions. I'm not afraid of saying, I don't know, and I'd like to learn. My hard work, my curiosity, and I pick things up rather quickly. And so I think that all added to my characteristics that I brought to McGough as a very new zero-hour apprentice.
So as you started in McGough and started getting situated there, how did your personal life take shape?
I have a very supportive family. I had young children at the time, and with working out in the field,
so
I
was... You must have got married first or been in a relationship?
I'm sorry. Yes, I have been married.
Don't forget the other. I have had that experience where I call my daughter instead of our daughter. When you're in a longer relationship, you end up taking the other person for granted. So I just want to make sure that what's your husband's name? Larry. Okay.
Yeah.
We want to acknowledge Larry in the conversation.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. He's been an integral part of who I am. And I've been with him. We've been married for 35 years now. So I've been with him longer than I was with my parents. So he is definitely an integral part of who I am and what I learned and my family. Yes, I was married. I had two children. And then I was able to find a role at McGough. My parents were kind enough at the time. They were able to watch my children while I went to work. So I was fortunate enough not to have to worry about finding daycare or paying for that daycare for that matter. I just was very supported. My husband was thrilled. Larry was thrilled to have me work at, and I think he was proud of me when I came home dirty and tired and exhausted. I've been very blessed.
And over these last 22 years, you've had a variety of different roles within McGough Construction, and you aspired, maybe you didn't aspire to leadership roles in the company, but what were some of the key learnings and how did you arrive at these new roles?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, I do have a tendency to get bored a little bit. And so once I feel like I've mastered it, so to speak, and it doesn't allow me to challenge myself any further, then I like to reach out and find new challenges. One of the great things about working for McGough is that they make that easy for folks at McGough to expand and to grow into something new and to diversify your skill set. And I didn't really frankly, aspire to leadership roles. I just really wanted to do the best that I could do and excel in my particular role, learn that, and then take the next step. So those leaderships came to me, I think, because I kept my nose to the grindstone, so to speak, and I was willing to take other challenges and grow while working. I wasn't necessarily content in just not increasing my knowledge. So as my current role, some of the most challenging is the most challenging role that I've undertaken at McGough, and one in which I probably won't be 100% successful in. But I think that's what kind of keeps me motivated, keeps me looking forward to going to work every day and seeing how I can help McGough become a more diverse and inclusive workplace, as well as the industry as a whole, too.
Yeah.
That's important, too.
I appreciate your risk-taking, too, to have this conversation, because I know you didn't come to it easily. And in preparation for it, I took a look at some definitions of diversity. What I found diversity to mean in the research that I found is a unique mix of differences: race, gender, gender identity, sexual orientation, social class, ethnicity, physical abilities, age, relation, national origin, beliefs, political affiliations, and life experiences. That's a lot to know about a person. We have a tendency to assess people quickly, and you can see that the deeper that you understand yourself and the particulars about your own upbringing, you're describing yourself as Caucasian, I'm Caucasian. Within the Caucasian arena, there's all these different countries where white people have come from. And like understanding my German heritage was really important to me. And the further I dove into it, the more I understood that there are generations and generations of farmers, dairy farmers in my family. And so when I became vegan earlier this year, the journey to kind of look at the culture that we grew up in and the livelihood that was tied to that took me on this, you know, and I'm still learning about it, on a kind of an adventure, which also helps me understand that there's lots of layers for us to understand about each other and how, and when you bring our, when we bring ourselves in the workplace, how we can be curious about our backgrounds. And so there's a definition that you have at McGough that I was wondering if you could share that definition. That was a long way to get to that.
Well, thank you for asking. So McGough recognizes that diversity is that multivariate experiences and worldviews that we all bring to the table. So those lenses in which we view everything. So I keep mentioning that I'm the oldest of seven kids, and each one of us, even though we were raised in the same family, in the same environment, we all have different lenses that we bring to the table. So it's really fascinating to see how we are the same from our experiential background and the family background, but we're also different in how we view what that family background looked like. Mm-hmm. And so we view and address diversity at McGough as a benefit to the company. It's a tool for innovation, but don't get me wrong, we are also, as a company, on a journey, much like myself, on a journey of understanding and knowledge and bettering myself. But the company is also on a journey. So we recognize that there's an opportunity for us and a challenge for us to achieve a workplace that is more inclusive and more belonging to everyone.
Nice. Yeah. And you're right. It's a long journey, because even going through the process of monocultural mindset of sameness and oneness and the perspective of not oneness with the world, but oneness with your own perspective, right? And you're because you're looking at the culture based on the culture that's before you. And then as you progress your understanding and learn more, then we start moving into areas in which we become curious about other cultures and what their traditions are. during the holidays and what their practices are and their political affiliations and beliefs and national origin. So when you're talking about within your own family, and you have six siblings and two parents, that there was a lot of diversity within the beliefs and the life experiences and the age that everybody was and the age to and the role within the family.
Absolutely. I think one of the other things that we have to recognize as Caucasian individuals is it is our culture that dominates, that's dominated in the media, in education, in work. So not only to be able to recognize differences in, of cultures, but also to recognize that what we're seeing isn't reality for other marginalized communities, right? It's we don't have to think about that air that we breathe because everything around us is built into that Caucasian kind of mindset. And we have to recognize that is not a very inclusive and or allows for a sense of belonging for everyone. And I think that's where we're trying to get to with that cultural competency and recognizing that there have been some and continues to this day some severe racial inequities that need to be recognized and addressed. And that's some of the challenges that we face as individuals and as a society and as within our companies as well.
Yeah. There are a number of nonprofits that I'm aware of in Minnesota that are pouring hundreds of millions of dollars into the Midwest to make reparations with our Native American of populations to really make it more of an equal playing ground economically. So I'm really excited about that there is some work and there needs to be money behind the activities and an actual real side-by-side working together with each other like you're doing at McGough right now. So if diversity means a unique mix of differences, inclusion for our purposes, is the how differences are addressed in the workplace. And so when there is inequity and there is disparity in our ability to really progress equally, we need to be able to look at what that is and how can we address it in a constructive way. And the further that you understand the differences, the more that you can be more constructive and you can reach a deeper level of understanding where you actually have idea, right? Where the ideas start coming to you in problem solving and working together. So to summarize, with diversity and inclusion, each person needs to be seen, heard, and respected. And that brings us to cultural competency, which has to do with the skills used to understand and communicate across the differences effectively. So all parties are aware of their, what we were talking about, Karen, is our implicit biases and leveraging diversity by embracing differences as an added benefit and not judging as something wrong or bad. So can you give us some examples of how diversity, inclusion, and cultural competency are factored into McGough's workplace practices?
Sure. When I began this work about a little over 10 years ago, most of my work on diversity, equity, and inclusion was focused on external work, connecting with businesses and organizations that promote and honor DEI. So partnering with community-based organizations that promote education and inclusion in the built environment, like Summit Academy, OIC, Goodwill, Easter Seals, Merrick, a number of different organizations that specifically focus on the construction industry and educating folks about the very viable family sustaining wage jobs that are in this particular industry. And with that, and with that work and my own personal growth and understanding as to some of the challenges, my own implicit biases, the racial inequities and systemic racism that are built into our systems, it became clear to me that what we really needed to start doing is start focusing internal work. as opposed to external work. We have to shift that educational focus inward and build it into who we are at McGough and how we do things. So for the last several years, my focus has been just that. We've developed an equity steering committee that's populated with volunteers throughout the company, representatives from all of our outstate offices, and with a heavy focus on the leadership team. And our group has come together and developed four separate working committees that are working on various arenas so we can bake DEI into McGough and not have it something to be as just a checklist or just something that Karen does, but really is part of who what we do on a regular basis and who we are. So we have policies and procedures group, and we're looking at all our policies. We're looking at our job descriptions and how those might have unbeknownst to us, implicit biases built into it by the language, by the rigidity of them. And we're going through those and making sure that we eliminate as many implicit biases as we can. So we are more welcoming of all cultures as an employer. We have a cultural competency team who is working on fun ways to educate folks on. I don't want it to sound flippant, but that's important too, because what we don't want to do is we don't want to drive this work and make it sound as if we're pointing fingers. We don't want to shame anybody. We want to make it interesting and open that sense of curiosity to individuals so they're more welcoming of these larger concepts about racism and inequities and those types of things. But we want to bring people along and meet them where they're at and bring them along in a way that they want to come along, not kicking and screaming.
Yeah.
So that cultural competency is geared towards that. We have monthly brown bag lunches in which we talk about, we have an online training micro learning program that we have utilized over the last probably 2 years or so that focuses on educational opportunities for DEI. And then we pick a topic on those micro learning sessions and then we discuss them in person. And so it's been a really great opportunity to have to learn more about individuals, what their thoughts are on various topics, and come together and practice at having difficult conversations, because those are hard to do. But as you get more comfortable with speaking of your experiences and your thoughts and your aspirations, it becomes a little easier. And then finally, we have a recruitment and hiring group that's working on our need to diversify our workforce. And the fourth one is creating and establishing a employee engagement and advancement committee. And what they're doing is they're making sure that all employees have a very clear understanding as to their pathway when they start at a particular role and where that role can lead to McGough and what the needed steps are in becoming and growing their career path towards that ultimate goal of whatever they're interested in. Those are the four working committees that we have. And I think we're really dedicated to driving this effort, and they're all volunteers. So it's wonderful to see their participation spread throughout the strata of who McGough is.
Yeah. I love the concrete elements to the working committees. So the first one you said is policies and procedures, taking a look at the language and sifting out the rigidity and eliminating implicit bias. And the second one is cultural competency. So kind of meeting people where they're at and providing opportunities for them to have like brown bag lunch conversations. There's micro learning programs. There's ways in which of practicing having difficult conversations. I love that. And then the third area is recruitment and hiring. Take a look at that. And what was the fourth one? Creating and establishing engagement.
The fourth one was employee advancement and engagement. So how do we engage our employees, provide them with, so in the construction world, as I'm sure probably other worlds out there, the adage, it's not what sweet, sometimes played into it quite a bit. So people would come in an entry level role and not really see a clear path as to how can I advance my career. And not everybody has the tenacity as I do to ask, I'm ready for something new, where can I go? But they want to see a clear pathway. They want to understand, if I start in the field as a laborer and I eventually want to be a superintendent, how do I get there?
Yeah.
And what do I need to learn? And what are the steps involved in getting me to that process? So that's what we're doing, is developing a very clear pathway with requirements, skills that are needed to get to certain levels. And then from that level, what's the next step? So that is the fourth one.
Oh, it's fantastic. That's the way to address change, is to make it concrete and make it part of the culture. And it's okay to talk about it, and it's okay to investigate where there's implicit bias or where there, and we're going to have the tough conversations is what I'm hearing. But you're building that, you're through example into the culture. And I feel like I had to, like I did a lot to set up the conversation, but I'm noticing that it's part of, I guess, my own one, giving the listener permission to not know stuff, right? That I'm learning with everybody else, and to understand through definitions, and also to just set up the conversation in a way that feels like we can talk about it, whether we're comfortable or not, but just be able to talk about freely what we're experiencing as we're working with a wide variety of people and in companies that, from my small business, I've always had my eye on cultural diversity. And so I have always tried to work side by side with people and find and understand the culture by being in their culture, whosever culture I'm in. And so having a workplace environment, and I've been in a wide range of work environments too, I just can appreciate what your journey is, being in a company that has not been as focused as you are now in the area of inclusion, diversity, and cultural competency. And so the need is there to build cultural competency into the environment, so it becomes just a way in which you're doing business every day.
Mm-hmm. I think that is something, that's the ultimate goal, is to build it in so it's not something that we have to even think about. It's just what we do and who we are. However, I am not naive enough to believe that that's going to be an easy road to go down, an easy path. Then a society that has racism and sexism rampant, and the little that we can do ourselves, moving our own personal education in this forward, and as much as we can understand, and me particularly, I often stick my foot in my mouth, but if we can accept that we're going to be making mistakes and be open to making corrections and understanding from the individuals that are impacted by this day in and day out, that's where we really need to learn from. And because I can't be so presumptuous to believe that I am going to go in and fix everything as a white woman when I don't even understand what an individual from a marginalized community faces on a day-to-day basis. So having that sense of humility and being ready to be wrong on a regular basis, but willing to learn and to move forward, is something that I think we all have to practice and get better at.
And I just find there's power in conversation, and meaningful conversations can really make a big difference in navigating difficult conversations, and also to learn, get a deeper understanding of our differences and our similarities and what we can co-create together. Thank you so much, Karen. I'm excited for the ongoing conversations that we have. I'll probably ask you back to keep going in this conversation down the path. So I'm looking at this not as our first and only conversation. More to come. In our second conversation in this series, I'm going to bring Wendy Sullivan into the conversation, and she's with Wenrich PD Construction LLC, where we'll focus on Wendy's multi-venture entrepreneurial journey in the real estate and construction industries. And then Karen's going to come back into the conversation so the three of us can take a look at a practical perspective and how diversity and inclusiveness and culture competency works between them. So it's one example of two people who are doing the work and they're having great success at doing it. All right. So thanks again, Karen.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity and I look forward to our hearing more from Wendy and our joint conversation afterwards.
Excellent. And thanks, Mike Cabeas, sound engineer, videographer, photographer, Montfreya de Notre-Mère, brother from another mother. And thank you for tuning in and do what you can to take a look at your current work environment and see what kind of ideas that you have in making the culture that you're in more inclusive, diverse, and culturally competent. All right, see you next week. Do you want to build upon your leadership skills and become effective as a business owner? Do you want to evolve yourself as you redesign your business? You can. We know that dual innovation with mentoring works. We've mentored thousands of emerging to experienced entrepreneurial leaders and small business owners in this dual innovation process since 1992. We are here to co-create a mentoring process where you can nourish resilient relationships while you redesign your business. Resilient relationships promote relational literacy, the ability to understand and express healthy ways of relating. Even a slight increase in relational literacy can lead to significant improvement in all of your relationships. So why not take the risk to move out of dysfunctional relating and move into ways to deepen your connection to yourself and others? Assert self-leadership. If you aren't already subscribed to this podcast, go do it now. Go to wementor.com and get the support and skills needed to build a purposeful life journey with your peers on the entrepreneurial leadership path, consciously co-creating our future. You can also join our virtual mentoring community for one-on-one strategic mentoring or participate in a WeMentor lab because we mentor meaningful conversations and activities that lead to higher levels of functionality and engagement in our world and everything that we do with each other. So engage your curiosity and become the leader you envision yourself to be today. WeMentor.com. Go there. Check it out.